Talking about Insan E. Kamil, the idea of the integrated whole human being, this is kind of what we're trying to do. And in that sense, I would say Insan E. Kamil is the practice of becoming a whole human being. And by whole, I mean spiritually, physically, emotionally, and socially. That there's these choices that we're given daily from moment to moment where we can choose. And part of what we're trying to do in looking and being objective about our habits is to see what is interfering with us moving forward and growing. If growth is part of becoming a human being, then when you're not growing, then the opposite is happening. That means that you're dying. So growth is a part of living and a part of becoming a human being and a part of the practice of learning how to deal with our habits. And not just our habits, but other people's habits. Because, believe it or not, other people have habits too. And we have to deal with them, just as other people have to deal with ours. So, a lot of forgiveness and letting things go is part of the process of keeping social health. I haven't heard much about this before, so I'm just kind of opening up this door to look at it, to see, you know, what is socially healthy? You know, we can talk about this in terms of what is physically healthy. Well, eating good foods and having enough exercise and keeping the body and mind in a good balance. But social contact is also very important to being alive, being human, but there's better choices we can make over time. And a lot of our habits come from early social interactions. I think any therapist will back me up on that one, that a lot of habits that we have now come from things that happened early in our life. And part of our job as Sufis is to recognize when something is interfering and then to track it back to its source and look where it came from and then figure out a strategy of what tool or tools will help me remove this annoying habit. So social health is just as important as mental health and physical health. Because we see, for example, in families, as we all know, you see reflections of your habits in others. And then you get a chance to make some choices about whether you want to deal with those or not. In asking what is healthy, we're learning how to become a human being and learning how to develop these different forms or modes of asking what is more healthy and making better choices in doing that. Any questions about any of that?
Like healthy choices in social or?
Yeah, you know, in understanding that everybody is concerned about themselves, but that as an ambassador, if you will, of Allah, what we call Allah's caliphs, we're trying to represent what Allah wants. I mean, we can't really know exactly except from our heart and from sacred texts like the Quran and the Torah, that Allah wants people to be respected and to show tolerance and care for each other and to build trust and love. We want peace in the world. more than anything else. How do we get there? We get there with each person that we meet, and by being gentle and sincere and honest, and if necessary, to protect ourselves if the other person seems to have an aggressive or bullying demeanor. Now, this thing about vibrations, as the nefs get cleared away, the more that they get cleared away, the more sensitive we become to our environment. We become, as you know, there's sharia, which is like how things work the best. Tarika is why those things work the best. Hakika is the reality of seeing things as they really are. Once you get your nefs and your self-centeredness out of the way, you begin to see things and people as they really are. Then you begin to see the matrix. You begin to see the reality. And the reality is that everybody generally wants to think of themselves as the center of the universe. A non-Copernican view of how things work. In other words, it's all about me, and if you want about things about you, well, you're just a satellite or an orbit rather far away from me, and I might consider your needs, but my needs are first. This is a general population kind of look at things. And what I'm saying in regards to social health is the idea of, like, if we allow people to feel that way, they will feel safe and feel more trusting because they're getting what they want. Everybody wants love. Love me, and I'll feel better. When you don't get love, we get twisted. And when we get twisted, we have the world as it looks today, which is, you know, the possibility of this world being Eden or being a paradise. All it takes is effort and focus and a united vision that we want to have clean water. We want to have clean air. We want to have good relationships and have peace. To do that requires thinking of more than yourself and your narrow world, and more than, for politicians, more than their term in office. This is upsetting for a lot of people. thoughts? What do you think?
Yeah. I think it's very interesting you mentioned about like a galaxy, like planets and like satellite far away from another planet. So like if we look at it in a specific way, we tend to exclude stuff, and it's all part of the whole. So it's kind of like we are pretty much programmed to think like into a family, you belong to a city, you belong to a country, etc. So we have this distorted view. And I think now during this pandemic, we are really seeing that it's not true at all. So we are really affecting each other. Everyone action affects everyone else in every way. So about social health, it's also another level. When you think of someone in your mind, you are vibrating that energy, affecting, because it gets emitted even though you cannot see it, or you don't even really think it's powerful, and it's still affecting. And it's very interesting what you mentioned, like who you allow in your house and what gets in and all of that. It does. Sometimes you feel someone's looking at you strange or uneasy, or someone was in the same space previously, you come in and you feel strange, that's vibration you're talking about, that state lingering. So it's tangible sometimes, even though you're not even present. So it's also tangible, like by you feeling a positive vibration from someone. So like someone smiles at you, or maybe someone just looks at you with their eyes, and you know they want you to get better, feel better.
Good. Yes. The way I think about our relationship with others is kind of like each person is a complete universe within themselves, or a world, and we represent that world. And as representatives, we don't know anything about you except what you represent, what you present. So in considering each other as ambassadors of each person's world, I think we can approach it with that kind of respect that diplomats do when they meet each other at the United Nations. The Earth is kind of in itself a United Nations. As we each meet each other, we have the opportunity to perhaps bring peace to another world, or at least in paying it forward, we can be of service and being of use to another person by acknowledging first their presence and respecting their position as representative of their world, just as we would want it for our world. We each want to be appreciated, and we each want to feel worthwhile. If we don't feel that, then we'll find ways to get it. Some of them not so good. Thoughts?
You know, there are a lot of people who feel worthless, who feel like they're nothing. And a lot of those are homeless. They've got no confidence in themselves. So what is our obligation to them? How do we help them? Or do we just let them be?
I'd say this is a case-specific kind of thing. Each person that you meet is a whole different set of variables. And to generalize about all these specific variables, it's impossible in my estimation. I'd say this is where you have your conversation with Allah within your heart. You ask Allah, is there anything you want me to do here? Because sometimes we can't just go in and say we're helping another person just because we want to. When, for example, when we do healing here with the Ansari's Holistic Health Institute, the first thing we have to do is ask Allah's permission. There's some people who we can't heal because it's not our job. We don't have permission to do it because that person needs to go through some stuff that this is from Allah to teach them something. And so we can't interfere with that. If we do, we'll just make it worse.
Appreciate that. However, I mean, if we go back to the concept that everybody needs to be loved, I mean, to be made Alameen, you're the expert at all of this. You know, for somebody to feel loved and to feel worthy, then kindness, I would have thought, goes a long way, whether it's a smile or it's a hello.
It depends. It depends. Some people, part of their raison d'être is to not feel worthwhile because they're working out something. And if you try and say, no, you are worthwhile, they'll fight you because they're working on something completely different that you're not privy to. Yes? I mean, if I'm in a place where I'm going, no, I'm not, I may be dealing with a guilt or shame that I need to process and ask forgiveness for. No, so no matter how much you tell me I'm worthwhile, I can't get there because I have to process some guilt. I have to work on forgiveness.
Yeah, because in the sort of inner city, there's a lot of homeless people. When I go for a walk every night, you know, they always hang around outside Woolies or outside the police station.
I think Australia is one of the better places to be because there is a lot of help for homeless people.
True.
As I understand, I am from California. Both LA and San Francisco, Oakland and Berkeley, where it looked like Calcutta. Whole streets of people in cardboard boxes and their trolleys and in trouble. I even was homeless. I know what it's like. And there's stuff that needs to be done to move through that. Australia is a good place for this. And if these people seek it, they will find it in regards to help. It's working. In San Francisco, it is horrible. Los Angeles, entire neighborhoods are homeless. And it's getting worse, of course. So I'm asking this question. In talking about this, I haven't really considered this before, but the idea of social health. We want to be, like I say, we want to be mentally healthy. We want to be socially healthy as well. And this is a question for you to consider. What does that look like? We try not to show our anger in a situation because it doesn't help at all in any way whatsoever. It doesn't mean that we don't feel angry because we're human beings. You know, we feel things. We feel all kinds of things. We just, some stuff we don't need to share with others because it doesn't improve the situation. As you know, when you throw petrol on petrol, it doesn't get any better. It just gets hotter. So the idea of when you're angry, for example, of not entering into any kind of discussion, or what is sometimes better is to remove yourself from the situation until you can breathe again. When you're angry, you are being breathed mostly by the adrenaline. And this is because we're part monkey. We have certain emotional tools that helped us survive in the jungle and the veldt. And anger had a purpose. We don't need it now, but it's still in our hardwiring. So learning how to control it is part of the job of being both mentally healthy, physically healthy, and socially healthy. So not acting on anger is one of the things that we have to learn how to practice. And sometimes it's just not saying anything until you have some kind of balance again. Because when you're angry, you're not balanced. You're flooded with this hormone that is going to make you do something stupid or say something stupid. And will not help the situation. So any way that you can withdraw until you can recover your breath so that you are breathing, that you're not being breathed, then you're going to feel a little bit better and you won't have burned any bridges. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. But I think anger can be quite toxic to the body.
Absolutely. It's been proven.
Yes. And it, you know, so I realize, you know, this control of anger is very important. But the big thing is how do you totally let go of it?
Because yeah.
It's affecting you the next, you know, in a couple of days or in a week's time.
Right. Okay. The first thing is, you have to take control of your breath, and you know, if it's a sudden thing and you're confronted by something, here's a couple of things you can do. When you breathe slowly and deeply, what you're doing is you're recharging and reoxidizing, or, you know, adding in oxygen to deflate, as it were, the adrenaline. And this takes about 3 to 4 minutes. It doesn't happen right away. Sometimes it takes maybe even 5 to 10 minutes, depending on the people and the situation. So you can get yourself back. Now, for those things that stay with you that are emotional, not, you know, confrontational, that are painful and that you feel really slighted or abused or whatever happened, and these things last for a couple days, you know, it is said, yeah, I think it's in a hadith, that after 3 days, you need to let it go. You need to forgive and forget. Because if you carry it any further, you're going to get sick. It will damage you physically. I'd say the mind is much more powerful than the body.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
And what I've also learned is the mind can be wounded, but can also heal. Just like the body. However, like the body, there will be scars. Some things heal, but not well. In which case, we need to go back in and lance the wound to get the nasty stuff out so that we can have it heal properly. In our social work and with other people, we need to be aware that other people want to feel trusting, they want to feel loved, just like we do, and they want to feel safe. And especially what we were talking about earlier, they want to feel worthwhile. Now, as you were saying, Yasmin, about homeless people, when you're homeless, you don't know who you are anymore, because we tend to have, that it's important for us to have a geographic center. That without that, we feel like we're floating. And when we float, we don't feel quite, well, we don't feel grounded. Without feeling grounded, we're not connected both to the earth and to Allah. It's a very unpleasant feeling and can give rise to all kinds of other problems. So sometimes it's helpful to donate to charities, for example. I just did that today. You can find a charity that you feel will be taking care of that. That's something that you can do. As regards homelessness or suicide therapies or any kind of things, that you can help with that. That's a good thing.
So I've just got a quick question. So with the tithing, but not tithing, what's the term for giving money? Is it zakat?
Yeah, zakat.
Zakat, okay. So is it not better, I mean, I don't know, I get confused sometimes, to give it to that person directly or to give it to an organization that helps?
It's up to you. It's, you know, once again, asking your heart, you know, or asking Allah, okay, what is it you want me to do in this situation? I would like to help. Do I have permission to help? And then you listen to the answer. And you may give to this donation, or don't give to this person because they'll just get drunk. So,
yeah, because there's so many. This guy sits outside the post office every day with his
family,
you know.
You know what I find helps, Yasmin?
Mm.
And I think you told us once, Shake, and Shake Tanner had told us, because I feel a bit conflicted too, because there's many homeless people sometimes in my area. Sometimes I feel, oh, do I give or don't I give? And just to pray for them. So it's the Yahadi, Yahak, Yalatif. And just when you look at them, just have that in your heart. And I find that that sort of, for me, it settles something in my system.
So. Yeah, I mean, like one does that, but, you know, sometimes you just feel, oh.
Okay.
You know, wish you could do more, but you don't know, you know. And is money the way? I mean, maybe you should be giving them food. Anyway, look, we better change topics.
No. What's important is that you learn how to talk to your heart and have a dialogue. So asking, what can I do in this situation? Sometimes it's not about a homeless person. It could be somebody that's crying. You know, they're in a coffee shop and all of a sudden you see them break down. Question to your heart, should I go over to that person, or what do you want me to do in this situation, Allah? And then the trick, the biggest trick, is to learn how to listen to your heart. Listening to your heart means not having any expectations about what you should do, because then it becomes imagination. And then you think, oh, well, I should go over and give that person a hug because that's what my heart said. No, that's your imagination. Your heart's different. Because when you feel it in your heart, you know it's the right thing. And then when you do whatever is necessary for that person, it will be right, and they'll know, and you'll know, and everything will just be like, yeah, that was good. And you can only do that by experimenting, you know, find out which is imagination and which is Allah talking to you through your heart. That's why we have the zikr of Ya Latif, so we can learn how to read our heart and listen to it, respond to it appropriately. Assalamu alaikum, Marids, seekers, curious, and interested listeners. We appreciate you and are happy to share our Sufi message. Your donation will help support our Sufi center in Sydney, where we do zikr, sobat, spiritual counseling, and healing services. We believe the message should be free, but it costs equipment, rental, services, software, and hardware to get this to you. So thank you for choosing our podcast among all the millions available. If you go to our website, AnsariSufiOrder.org, you will be able to donate through PayPal whatever you think this information is worth to you. Blessings and love, the Australian Ansari Sufi Order.